centimeter is not new. But what is new is that now the technology has developed to a point that we can think about probing the dark ages. That is the time after recombination, but before first stars form. And this is the last frontier in cosmology. So this is where the cosmological observations stand today. So we have Big Bang nucleosynthesis that probes about redshift of 10 to the 9, it probes the homogeneous universe. Then we have CMB at redshift of about 1000, it probes the anisotropies and the perturbations in the universe also. Then at low redshifts, we have observations of the matter distribution in the universe, and that also gives us information about the perturbations and anisotropies that were present in the early universe and which grew and formed galaxies and other stuff. But all these observations cannot go to very small scales. With CMB, you can probe about scale the wave number, it is the units are co-moving megaparsec. So CMB, you can probe about scales bigger than about 10 megaparsec. At smaller scales, because the recombination is not instantaneous, the free streaming of photons erases the structures at smaller scales. And in the at low redshifts, in the in probes of distribution of matter, we can't do any cosmology with smaller scales, smaller than 10 megaparsec, because those scales have undergone nonlinear evolution, and it's difficult to connect what we see with the fundamental physics or cosmology. With numerical simulations, you can, maybe in case of Lyman alpha forest, get down to about 1 megaparsec scales, but that's about it. And so there is this dark edges between recombination and when first stars form, and we don't probe that. No. Okay, so this is the just hyperfine transition of hydrogen. So its frequency is 1420 megahertz. The energy difference in kelvins is 0.068 kelvin. And most of the hydrogen during the dark ages is in ground state. So this is the only excitation that is possible. Okay, so this is the new observational window of 21 centimeter radiation between about redshift of 6 and 200. Now you can go to lower redshifts also. Wherever there is neutral hydrogen, you can use this. But the important thing is that at high redshifts, there is no significant nonlinear evolution even on small scales, and you can probe as small as maybe kiloparsec or 10 kiloparsec scales. So there is complementary information in this compared to other cosmological probes. Okay. So usually when discussing the 21 centimeter observations, you use something called spin temperature. T star is 0.068 Kelvin. And these are the NT is the higher state is triplet state, lower state is the singlet state, and these are the population level number densities in those levels. And these are the degeneracies in those levels. So, okay. So this is just a convenient way to write the equations. This is the definition of spin temperature. And this is the thermal history of the universe. So universe recombines at redshift of 1000, CMB decouples from matter. But there are enough residual electrons that due to Thomson scattering, they heat up the gas. They transfer energy from CMB to gas and maintain the gas or baryons at CMB temperature up to redshift of around 400. Only at redshift of 400, the Thomson heating becomes inefficient. And after that, the gas cools adiabatically, while CMB temperature goes as the redshift. Okay, and so we are interested in spin temperature to calculate whatever signal will be. And it is determined by two main processes at these redshifts. One is the collisions between hydrogen atoms. So when two hydrogen atoms collide, it can flip the spin of electron. And if
the density is high enough and there are enough collisions, then this will maintain the spin temperature at the kinetic temperature of gas. While and this is what dominates at high redshifts when density is high enough. But as the universe expands, density falls, and these collisions become inefficient, and the radiative processes, the emission absorption of CMB dominates. And so the spin temperature starts moving towards the CMB temperature. The spin temperature starts moving towards the CMB temperature. And then at a redshift of around 30, we don't know exactly when.
Yeah. And actually, about 30, the first stars form, and all this we can't apply this simple calculation. So I will concentrate only on that shift greater than 30 when the physics is easily computable. Okay. And so radio astronomers use the brightness temperatures to quantify the amount of intensity they observe, and this is just related to the observed intensity by this Valéjean's formula, that is the long wavelength limit of the black body formula.
There's molecular reaction networks that go on in this, during that time, right?
Right, and there will
there are
subatomic. All they will do is affect the gas temperature a little bit. But I don't think that is too important. But it can be easily taken into account. People have done calculations of. So that will just affect the gas temperature.
So now gas temperature is many orders of magnitude higher than CMB. So what happens?
Right. So the stars form, and they heat up the universe.
See, this well before gravitation or heating.
Right. Yeah. This is before any structural shocks or anything, any significant nonlinear structure form.
Gravitational heating starts much earlier than star formation, actually.
Oh, right, but this is that shift of 30, yeah. Right.
No, but it's already star formed. Star already formed.
No, that stars will probably form at start, like first stars. They'll probably start forming between that shift of 30 and 20. We don't know exactly where. So yeah, so if stars form much earlier, then we can't observe or we can't use those redshifts. We have to go earlier. So if there are significant star formation at 30 and there is significant gravitational heating at redshift of 50, then we can't use redshifts smaller than 50. We have to use redshifts greater than 50, unless you can calculate exactly how the gravitational heating will work.
What is the law for cooling of a gas? How it depends on Z?
What is that?
Law for cooling of a gas. Power of Z.
What's?
This is the adiabatic. This is, I think, square or. We can go use it calculative using adiabatic formula. So volume goes as 1 over V and then V to the gamma.
Okay, so if you don't remember, it's okay.
It is just a simple adiabatic cooling. Just the expansion cools the gas. It is more than just the CMB.
Yeah, so when the stars form here, the gas temperature will go up. Okay. So this is what we want, the brightness temperature. And what I am using here is the difference between the observed brightness and the CMB temperature. That is the amount of absorption. And that is given by this formula. I will not go into details of this, but this tau is the optical depth. The only thing to notice here is that it depends on a bunch of atomic physics. A is the Einstein emission coefficient. This is the frequency. The spin temperature depends on atomic physics. And it depends on the density and velocity fields of the gas. And it of course, it depends on cosmology. So it is sensitive to a lot of things, and we can do a lot of physics with this. Okay, so this is what I will concentrate on, the dark edges, that is actually between 30 and 200. This corresponds to 7 megahertz and 46 megahertz observed frequency. And epoch of reionization is probably starts at redshift of 30 and goes up to maybe redshift of 6. I will not go into this. Okay, so here's a comparison of what we can get from 21 centimeter versus CMB. So CMB is just a one slice of the universe that we observe. It is a surface. But with 21 centimeter, we probe a volume. Or if you want to compare with CMB, you can see, look at it as you are observing lots of slices at different frequencies. The number of slices you get will depend on which mode you are observing. At smaller modes, you can get more slices. The way to quantify the information content, we can quantify the information content from 21 centimeter for comparison with CMB. And so L is the angular mode, or when you decompose your sphere into spherical harmonics, it's like angular wave number. So in a volume, the number of modes, so you can quantify it by saying how many number of modes are available, because that is what determines your statistical error, how many independent modes you can measure. In case of CMB, it is a surface, so it goes as L square. So that is around 10 to the 7, assuming you measure about 3,000, L of 3,000 or so. But 21 centimeter is a volume, and you go to much smaller scales. And so this is like 10 to the 16. So it is orders of magnitude higher than that. So this is the power spectrum that you expect from CM, 21 centimeter compared with CMB. So this maybe you have seen earlier, but maybe you have not seen to such high L. So this is the SIG, where SIG damaging dominates and you lose information. So for CMB, you can probably go to up to few thousand, L of few thousand. That is what is used here. But for 21 centimeter, there is information at up to much smaller scales. Yeah, there will be acoustic peaks here also, but they are very small, but they can be detected.
What process cuts off with radiation at higher redshift?
At redshift of 200? Well, so at high redshift, the gas temperature approaches is almost equal to CMB temperature, and there is no signal. The spin temperature, gas temperature, and CMB temperature are all in equilibrium. That is because of the constant heating of the gas.
But equilibrium doesn't mean it cannot radiate.
But absorption and emission cancel itself.
Yeah.
So you don't see anything.
Equilibrium means that emission is equal to absorption, so there's no net signal. There's no net emission or absorption of CMB.
It just means it's not transparent. Equilibrium still where there's radiation.
But you just see thermal black body because everything is in the same temperature.
Okay, so there's a lot of information if we can get to it. I will talk about how we can get to that information using the two examples. One is variation of fine structure constant, how that affects the signal, and the other is cosmic superstring, which does not relate to the variation of coupling as such, but it does give you information about the fundamental mass scales. If we can observe these things. These are just the current constraints. I will not, we have already seen a lot of these. I will not go into this. So there are a lot of parameters that go into the equations. The frequency itself depends on goes as alpha to the 4, and the absorption coefficient goes as alpha to the 13. But what really matters is it really enters with a new in the denominator. So what we really get from here is alpha to the 8th power. And then the collision cross sections also depend on alpha, and there's no simple way to see what the dependence will be. We have to do ab initio calculations for this, and it depends on temperature. So this is the collision cross sections shown as a function of temperature for different web variations in alpha, -2%, 2%, -1, 1, and 2%. It's a function of temperature. And then the Thomson scattering cross section that also depends on alpha. And the ionization fraction that determines the heating of the gas that also depends on physics of recombination and fine structure constant. And people have calculated this for constraining the fine structure constant using CMD.
Could you please say something? Where does the alpha to the 13 come from? Does it for the A coefficient?
That is the Einstein emission coefficient.
Yeah,
so if you write down this formula, it goes as frequency to the 3rd power, and then I think there are some other factors.
But that type of construct, the frequency cube, and you can go on transition frequency cube, then we do not divide by atomic unit. So it gives you extra alpha squared. So.
I was just intuitive. So it mainly comes from the frequency dependence.
Yes, because the railroad nu is alpha to the 4, which is not actually alpha. Nu is alpha squared times atomic unit.
But isn't the frequency dependence just a statement? I was wondering if you would write it down in terms of an atomic oscillator. Strains, like looking at the magnetic moment and how it radiates. Would that give the same?
The magnetic moment.
Are you sure that?
They're probably just picking up the alpha part, thinking that the magnetic moment is a maximum connection fixed relative to each other. That's probably the case.
Yeah, we are fixing all the constants, so just picking up the alpha.
So if you want to put this in terms of dimensionless measurement, you would be comparing brightness temperature one redshift to one temperature another redshift. Is that the case?
No, the actual measurement will be of brightness temperature, and
sure, but
you will compare it with theory. So you will pick the alpha, you measure the brightness temperature, and then fit the value of alpha along with other cosmological parameters.
Yeah, so okay, you need to know what the other things that could produce a similar sort of signal.
Right, so I will get to that.
Yeah, good.
I'll talk a little bit about the genesis actually right now. So, well, this is the brightness temperature, this is the mean brightness temperature, that is the average signal over the whole sky as a function of redshift. And also shown is the variation with alpha. And you can see that the fractional variation in brightness temperature depends on the redshift. It is redshift dependent. And it actually flips sign at one of the redshifts. And this is the fractional variation in the power spectrums that I showed earlier. This is a function of L for several different redshifts. And also, it crosses zero at around redshift of 40. So there's a characteristic redshift dependence of the signal, and that is very difficult to mimic by any other cosmological parameter. Anything else will probably affect all the redshift in an equal way. It will either drive power up at all redshifts or drive it down at all redshifts. So, but I don't think that it will be degenerate with any of the standard cosmological parameters. Okay, so we can see what constraints we can get on the fine structure constant and what kind of telescopes we need. So this is the
1 sigma constraint that you can get on delta alpha over alpha. This is the maximum L mode that you observe, or the smaller scale that you observe. So the current telescopes are like low far, and they don't have much sensitivities. We need much bigger telescopes. The CMB dBN's constraints are at level of 2%, and the cosmic radiance limit of CMB is around maybe 10 to the minus 3 or so. So what we really need is much bigger telescopes than are currently available. So if a compact telescope of a square kilometer collecting area can give you a constraint slightly better than 10 to the minus 2. If you want to do better than the cosmic radiance limit of CMB, you probably need about 10 square kilometers of collecting area. This is whole square, remember? So, and the quasar constraints stand somewhere here, 10 to the minus 5 or approaching 10 to the minus 6. If you want to beat the quasar constraints, then you probably need 10 to the 4 square kilometers of collecting area, that is 100 kilometer by 100 kilometer array of radio telescopes.
You'd be looking at different directions.
Right, so that is taken into account here, that we have information from lots of different redshifts. So these plots assume we observe 10% of the sky with a bandwidth of about 0.4 megahertz. So that determines how many slices you get.
But Maxim pointed that you measure delta alpha over alpha at higher redshifts. So it's
right.
It's a different.
So yeah, if you convert it into per year, then it will be different. I'm not converting per year. So yeah, so if you have evidence for variation from quasars at level of 10 to the minus 6, then higher redshifts maybe you would expect a little more variation. Okay. Cosmic superstrings. So these are the line-like topological defects that are theorized in to be produced in the phase transitions in the early universe in Suzy-Gut theories, and now they see these also in the superstring theory in the deep brain inflation scenarios. So what are these things? I will just explain in brief. So they arrive because of breaking off circular symmetry in the phase transition when you get unshrinkable loops. So simple way to see how we get these is, suppose there is a complex scalar field in a potential like this. At high temperatures, the value of field is zero. It is it sits here. So it is symmetric with respect to, there is no phase. So it has a circular symmetry. The potential is also circularly symmetric. At low energies, the field goes to the ground state and acquires a phase. And we say that there is spontaneous symmetry breaking, or the vacuum breaks the symmetry. And the value of phase at different points in the universe, which are causally disconnected from each other, will be random, because all these states have same energy. So it will just require random phases at different points in the universe. And if you make a big loop through the universe, then this field has to be continuous. There's a continuity requirement on it. So if you make a big loop through the universe, then this phase can change by 2 pi times n, where n is an integer. So if n is not equal to 0, then you have a non-zero winding, and this number n is conserved. You can see, so what that means is that if you try to shrink this loop to 0, at some point the field will try to acquire all the phases simultaneously, which is not possible unless the field is 0. That is what I mean by that the number n is conserved. You can't shrink it to a point. So what that means is that at some point inside this loop, you will get a lump of potential. And if you extend this in the third dimension, you get a spring. And then again, because of the continuity requirement, the string cannot terminate. It has to be either of infinite length or it has to close on itself. And the important parameter of the string is the string tension. It is, if you take p of light 1 in dimensionless unit, it is g nu. And this is the only important parameter in the problem. This is what we want to constrain. So the important property of strings is that the space-time around them is conical. You can look at it as a wedge of space removed from space-time. Or if you go around the string, then the angle you traverse is not 2 pi, but 2 pi minus epsilon, where epsilon depends on the string tension. So what this means is that and the strings move relativistically through gas. So the gas on two sides of the string, as the string passes, will get a momentum kick towards the string, or the gas streams will converge towards each other and lead to an overdensity. And this is how they create perturbations in the matter through which they move. And that is the signature we are looking for. And okay, so they are, some people might argue that they are very generic in gut theories. And in lots of models of brain inflation, you find these strings. And actually, this is a very well understood physics that leads to this, if you believe in gut theories, because they have been observed in the lab experiments in which there are similar phase transitions in superfluids or superconductors or liquid crystals. And you see that you form this topology, equivalent of these topological defects in these materials. So this is a simulation of a string network by Allen and Shellard. So the strings are not straight. They are like wiggly. They do a random walk with some correlation rank through the universe. And the correlation length is usually a fraction of Hubble length. So they follow a scaling relation. As universe expands, the correlation length follows the expansion of the universe. It scales with the universe. And this is a very generic property regardless of the actual mechanism of forming cosmic strings. Both gut theory strings as well as superstrings will have this property. So this is very generic, irrespective of how you form the strings. Okay, so here is the cosmic string, so they generate perturbations in the matter, and you can calculate the power spectrum just like the inflationary power spectrum. So here, this is the power spectrum of cosmic strings for a string tension of 10 to the minus 7 compared with the inflationary power spectrum. And the thing to notice is that the shape of the power spectrum that we get by cosmic string is different from inflationary power spectrum. And it has more power at smaller scales. So if you want to detect cosmic strings through the measurements of power spectrum, then you want to go to smaller and smaller scales. And you can relate this string tension, if you detect this, can relate it to the fundamental scales in string theory or in the gut theories, UV gut theories. So in simple models, for example, this 10 to the minus 12 of string tension will correspond to about 10 to the 13 GeV. Okay, so here is the constraints that you can get from 21 centimeter compared to other constraints. So WMAP gives a limit of about 10 to the minus 7. There's also a limit from pulses. Through pulses, observation of pulses limit the amount of gravitational waves in the universe. And these cosmic strings also radiate gravitational waves. So because we have not detected any gravitational waves yet, that puts a limit, and that is comparable to CMB. So to get to the interesting range where most of the models of deep brain inflation predict these cosmic strings, string tension to lie, that is this range of 10 to the minus 8, 6 to 10 to the minus 12. So you need something like a 100 times 100 10 to the 4 square kilometers of collecting area, or maybe even bigger, 10 to the 6 square kilometers. This is the cosmic variance limit. So this is what I was talking about when I said that it has more information compared to CMB. The number of modes are 10 to the 16 compared to 10 to the 7 in CMB. And that is shown by this cosmic variance limit.
The reason why you don't plot the SKA?
SKA will not go to such these low frequencies.
Right, okay. Doesn't get low enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
The low power does go low power, or there's a long wavelength array in New Mexico, which have like one square kilometer of collecting area. So we'll probably not be able to do interesting cosmology with those, but they will put in interesting, they will be like precursors of the experiments. Okay. You can see this cosmic variance limit in the fine structure case also. So this is cosmic variance limit. If somehow you can get all the information there, then you can maybe go to a constraint on delta alpha of 10 to the minus 10 and at less shifts of 30 to 200. Okay. So I have just given you the good news up to now. So the bad news is that the sky is dominated by galactic and extragalactic foregrounds, which is mostly synchrotron. Our signal is at the level of millikelvin. So these foregrounds are at the level of 19,000 kelvin, so about 6-7 orders of magnitude higher. And this is actually what drives the area of telescopes, tracking area of telescopes up. So if we did not live in the galaxy, but somewhere outside, then we will not need such big telescopes. You could probably do these experiments at your home. Okay, so
the large collecting area just solves the sensitivity issue, but you still have to remove these foregrounds. And we think that they can be removed, and that is how they can be removed. Our 21 centimeter signal is coming from a random Gaussian field, so it is a random Gaussian signal if you look in frequency. But the foregrounds should be smooth in frequency because they are coming from single source, or from the same sources at different frequencies. And this property can be used to subtract the foregrounds and get the signal. And again, I must point out that this number comes from the radio surveys which were done like many years ago with very coarse resolution. So if you can get, we can find some small holes in the sky where these foregrounds are much less, then we can do much better. So we don't know if there are such holes because we don't have any data. But so these first telescopes that are being built on will provide such data, and we can make better predictions after that. Okay, another problem is the interstellar scattering. There are free electrons in the interstellar medium through which this radiation is passing. And at such, and these low frequencies, the scattering is quite large. And in fact, it limits your observations to about 1 arc second at 30 megahertz. At lower frequencies or at higher redshifts, it will be even bigger. So this corresponds to about L of 10 to the 6. If you go to higher redshifts, you can, so this is the maximum oil mode you can observe. And the last problem is the terrestrial interference. This megahertz frequency is what we use for all the communication. And that is actually very hard to get rid of. And the solution for this is that we go to the far side of the moon. So NASA has quite serious plans to go to the moon, and when you go there, you have to do something. So, but the telescope there will not look anything like this. This is probably too futuristic. It will probably look something like this. This is the proposal called Dark Ages Lunar Interferometer. And what is proposed is that you print dipoles on a polymer sheet and then roll it out into the crater. And this is very lightweight, can be easily transported, and you probably not need to go to the moon yourself. This can probably be done robotically. So this is the proposal. So this is just the small abstract from the proposal. So it says that it represents the last frontier in cosmology. Right.
So it will cover about
10 to 50 megahertz or 10 to 100 megahertz, which is actually for 15 to 150. It has about 10 to the 5 dipoles. That corresponds to about 10 square kilometers of collecting area. So this can probably put limits on variation of fine structure constant at the level of maybe 10 to the minus 3 or maybe even little less. 2 times 10 to the minus 4. And you might even be able to detect some cosmic strings. So cosmic strings, I did not tell you the whole story. So the colliding gas strings behind the strings form shocks, and it is highly nonlinear. So everything is not captured in the nonlinear calculation that I just showed. So it may be possible, even if we don't detect the signatures of cosmic string in the power spectrum, to detect them in the 21 centimeter maps.
Rule out the same device in space, it's probably much cheaper than the one.
I don't know. So you have to be shielded from Earth. So the far side of, so okay.
Human space probably
stays. So the only site in the solar system shielded from human generated interference and attacked from solar radio emissions. So the far side of the moon is the only place that. In space, you still get the human interference.
So
you'd have to push them very far from the sun to reduce the interference from the sun, I guess. Is that
what you're saying? Solar. Well, even if you push them very far, even if you're seeing the sun, then the sun is very bright.
It may be in shadow of the Earth instead of the shadow of the moon.
Yeah.
Just in the quarter.
Then you've got the Earth's radio emissions, which is worse. What's the proposed timeline, or is this just a wild idea, or is this an actual?
No, so this is actual proposal actually. I think they have submitted it to NASA. NASA probably timeline is like by end of next decade.
It's also goals in the future, right? What was then? Two more elections away.
Okay, so I will end with the words of Edwin Hubble, the first cosmologist, if you like. This is from his book, The Realm of Nebulae, in which he described his first measurements of velocities and redshifts of nebulae as the galaxies were called at that time, and then describing its implications on cosmology. So he says that thus the exploration of space ends on a note of uncertainty. And necessarily so, we are by definition in the very center of the observable region. We know our immediate neighborhood rather intimately. With increasing distance, our knowledge fades and fades rapidly. Eventually, we reach the dim boundary, the utmost limits of our telescopes. There we measure shadows and we search among the costly errors of measurement for landmarks that are scarcely more substantial. The search will continue, not until the empirical resources are exhausted, it will pass on to the dreamy realms of speculation. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions, please?
I heard about something called Lunar LOFAR, which is again probably far in the distant proposal. But I don't remember what.
Is that a European proposal?
May well be, given the fact where LOFAR is. But yeah, very similar. You land something on the moon, it sends out, I guess, cables or something, and then puts up lots of antennas. But what length scale that is, I'm not sure. I think there's just, they wanted to start with just one of these stations, which obviously would not give you very big.
So before this telescope is built, there will be, I think, few precursor missions to just put few antennas and see. To develop and test the technology.
Any other questions?
I haven't read the paper, or perhaps I should, but can they deploy them without having rovers? Because that would be cheaper.
Deploy them without rovers?
Yeah, so you just do an orbit, and each time you pass the same spot, you throw out another radio telescope down to the surface.
Yeah,
I don't know if that rovers build it, maybe. I don't know. It's just a wild idea. But while we're speaking of wild ideas,
You can probably bombard a crater with metal.
If this ever goes into a precision stage, could you ever measure something like deuterium, which is different.
So there is actually a paper on that also. So deuterium also has a hyperfine line. But you can't detect the deuterium signal by itself because it is very small. But you can cross-correlate the deuterium observations with 21 centimeter observations. So they are tracing the same density field. And using that cross-correlation, you can determine the primordial abundance of deuterium. So the data paper on this on our trial is used.
Helium-3 is useless, right? Helium-3 is useless because there is no electricity. That would be nice.
Helium
is no quite advanced structure. That would be more interesting than deuterium because firm predictions of
helium. Lithium maybe, but lithium is again very small.
Lithium is then more skinny.
Any other questions? So we have two minutes break, 2 minutes sharp, please. You cut your coffee and come back.